So welcome everybody. Tonight is with the disclaimer of we are not covering the entire topic. We will not be able to answer all questions regarding people's liabilities with what we cover tonight. This is really we could really do a whole series on this. I kind of bit off more than I can chew, but hopefully we'll give enough of the background just to know some of the issues, at least, that people are going to decide when it comes to some of these questions. So I will put out three questions right now that we might want to consider, and then we'll try to do the sources, and then we'll see how they fit into some of those questions. So number one, a person comes to the rabbi, says, "Hi, I have these dishes. They were I did this and that to them." And the rabbi scratches his head and strokes his beard also. Says, "I'm sorry, I don't think there's any way out. I think you have to throw them out." And then, a week later, the rabbi's listening to a shir on the treadmill or something, and he hears someone has this wonderful idea that maybe would permit those dishes. So he quickly calls up the person who had this. "Oh, I threw them out already." So, is the rabbi liable for giving the bad advice that led them to throw their dishes out? Okay, question one. Question two. There's a discussion at a board meeting. They're sitting around and talking. And there's certain parts of the shul that need a new painting. So somebody says, "Oh, paint. I could do paint. Come on. What's so hard about doing paint?" And, okay, you're going to get it to match? "Yeah, sure, I'll get it to match. Let's see, this room is yellow and red." So I go to the store, I ask for yellow and red paint, I get it, I paint part of the wall, whatever part needed, I paint yellow and red, and lo and behold, in walks Linda Garfield, and shrieks, right? What did you do to our room? You made it worse. And so is that board member perhaps responsible for doing what he did?
I like the library's purple door.
Right. That library. Okay. And question number three would be, and of course I can't see this really ever coming up in our shul, but all of a sudden the shul finds itself having a lot of money. And we decide that, you know what? And we decide, you know what? Let's start an endowment. So one guy in the board says, "Oh, I know how to invest the money. Let's invest it in, I don't know, Enron." What was the company that went broke that got all the money from Obama? The solar company. So whatever it is.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. All right, let's invest it there. Right, and lo and behold, right. Although the shul found itself very fortunate to have an endowment, they don't find themselves very fortunate for very long. Right. So could the person that gives that type of advice, as we welcome our shul president. So I know, very impractical here tonight, Alan, right?
Reality is a good habit. Go ahead.
Okay, could the person who made that suggestion, or could the person that actually invested it, meaning one guy said, "I'll take in charge and I'll invest it in the following thing," so could that person be held liable for their bad advice of investing in that type of thing, which poses shows also money. So those are three cases, right? Rabbi makes a bad psak, the person does a bad paint job, and number three is the person does a bad investment job. Okay, and then does it matter if the guy is a professional painter? Does it matter if the guy is a professional investor? Right? Do any of those things make any difference? So, all right. Well, now we head into some of the sources here. This is the route that we're going, which is pretty much the route we go every year. We start from about 2,000 years ago, sometimes 3,000 years ago, but tonight's going to be only 2,000 years ago, and we work our way forward. So 2,000 years ago to generally about 400 or 500 years ago, and then to the present day. Those are the three time frames we're going to be working with. So the entire front page are all Gemaras, Mishnahs and Gemaras from approximately a little less than 2,000 years ago. So number one issue is as follows. So liba v'libasa haruach imyesh b'livuyav kedei l'lvosa chayiv. All right. So the rabbis taught, if a person fanned a flame, and the wind also fanned the flame, and that flame then went and lit someone's house on fire, right? So is the person liable for fanning the flame? So it's a so im yesh b'levuyav kedei lilvosa, if there was enough in his breath to get the flame over there, so he's going to be chayiv, right? He did it, right? He blew the flame into the house. However, v'im lav, he's going to be pater, right? If not, then he's going to be exempt. So Mara wants to, why? Because he didn't do it. The wind did it. He started the flame, right? And B, somebody drove by and said that might not be a good place to put that flame because the wind might blow, right? Those kinds of things could happen when you're outside, right? Such things happen. But yet he did it anyways. But yet the wind went ahead and we could kind of hold the wind liable for the damage. So it says in that case the person is exempt.
So he's not. He's only ignited the
fire. He started the fire and the wind took it over.
The wind took it over.
Yeah, so the Gemara asks, Amai lihavi kezora v'ruach misayat? Right, there is a malacha on Shabbos called winnowing. Right, how does one winnow? So you take your stuff, I don't know, your grains, you throw it up in the sky, right, and the wind blows away the bad stuff and leaves you with the shaft and leaves you with the good stuff, leaves you with the grain. So that is a malacha on Shabbos that one violates with the help of wind. So it seems like you could use wind and we do recognize wind as an action. So Rav Ashi Amar, he explains, and there's four answers to the Gemara. Rav Ashi is probably the most relevant. So Kiamrinan Zora Veruach Meseyaso Hadamilian Shabbos. He says that's a special Shabbos halacha, which is this concept in Shabbos called Melechas Machsheves, not for tonight, us for Torah. The Torah, that has to be, that's a special Shabbos thing. We prohibited that activity of Al-Hacha, but here, Grumma bi Almahu, Vegrumma bin Ezekin Pater. We call this Grumma. Many of us have heard the term Grumma before, right? A Grumma switch, a Grumma phone, a Grumma, right? So this is called Grumma, right? And Grumma is going to be exempt when it comes to Nezikin. What is Grumma? Grumma means I didn't cause it directly, but something else caused it. I caused something that perhaps caused it. I don't want to get too deep into what the definition is, because we're going to see that we're going to have a problem. But the rule seems to be that if I didn't do it directly and caused damage to something, so I'm exempt because I didn't do it, something else is what caused the damage. Source number one. Okay? Source number two, however. And this is a Gemara in Ksuvos. People are going to get a little more devious in this Gemara. Gufa. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said the following idea. Hamocher shtar chov l'chavero v'chazer u'machalo. A person sells a shtar chov. What does it mean he sells a shtar chov? It means I have an IOU. Meaning somebody, I don't want to ask for any volunteers, I've lent somebody money, right, and that person owes me money, and I have the contract right here. Meanwhile, the person hasn't paid me back. I need the cash. So what do I do with this? I sell it to... that like Western Union does or something. I sell it to somebody who buys it off of me, right? They owe me $100. They'll buy it off of me for $80, right? And at least I have my $80. Good so far? Okay. Technically, the Gemara says, now if I really wanted to be a mean person, right? L'chavero v'chazar u'machalo, I go back and I am mochel, I forgive the debt. So I go back to the person who owes me money. I already have my $80 in my pocket. And I say, you know what? I know you owed me $100. Let's call it a day. Right?
Wow.
Right?
Stock swaps.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess. This sounds like something Enron would do, right? Yeah, so I have the right. So I could go to this person and say, I'm going to forgive the loan. Right? Technically, I could even maybe take a few bucks from
him. I was just
going to
say, $20 will be.
Right? Such a possibility exists. Okay? Vafil Yorish Machel, not just me, not just do I have the right to forgive the loan, even my kids do. Meaning, if the kids inherited my stuff, so they inherited the debt. It was sold, but okay, they still inherited the debt. They have the right to forgive it. Right? That right exists. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Huna Bered Rav Yehoshua, V'ipikeachu. So if the person I sold it to was a wise man, so I sold it to Rabbi Cohen. Rabbi Cohen is a wise man who learned the Gemara in Ksuvos as well. So, Mekarkesh Le Zuzei, V'chasav Le Shtara Bishmei. Right? Rabbi Cohen is going to go to the person that the borrower, the original borrower, before he makes a deal with me, give him a few bucks and says, listen, that shtar which you had with that guy will forgive that. You owe me whatever it is. You're going to owe me $100 and we're going to write our own shtar. So before, right, Cohen says to this person, before Ben Gross has the right to forgive the loan, and I've heard he's like done this kind of thing in the past, before he decides to forgive the loan, we're going to have our own deal where you're going to owe me the money and you're not going to owe the money to Rabbi Gross. Okay? That's what Rabbi Cohen would do if he was smart. Okay? Let's say I didn't sell it to Rabbi Cohen. I sold it to somebody else who wasn't so smart, and they didn't know about this whole thing. So would I be obligated? Meaning, if I forgive that loan, I mean, again, somebody owes me money. I sold that loan to somebody else, right? The debt, I guess you call it, right? I sold that debt to someone else, right? Let's say I do go ahead and forgive it. So man de dayin, amar meimar. Meimar is a person's name. Man de dayin dina de garmi. If you assume that we say dina de garmi, now garmi sounds a lot like the word grumma, but it's not the word grumma, it's the word garmi. Okay, so if we assume like garmi, magbi be demei shtara ma'alya, right? The person that I sold it to, he can't go back to the person whose loans I forgave, but he could sue me. He can go after me. Why? Because I caused him to have a loss. Mm-hmm. By me forgiving the loan, he doesn't have a way to collect that debt anymore. So he can go after me for that money. If we don't assume that that person can go after me, so he could go after me for the price of the paper, which might not have been a small amount in those days, but it's still not the same as the amount of the loan. So what do we see here from this Gemara?
The value of the actual paper that it was written.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's worth it.
But it may not have been cheap.
Right, it might not have been, right, it might not be today, but still, you know, I think he'd rather be able to collect the loan. Okay, so the problem is that this sounds a lot like grumma, right? Grumma is, I set a fire and the wind takes it and blows the fire into a house. In that case, I'm exempt. In this case, I forgive a loan. Shmerel doesn't have to pay Beryl money anymore. I cause a loss to Beryl by me forgiving the loan, right? That also sounds indirect, but yet in this case, I am chayiv.
Direct.
What?
Very direct, if you ask.
You think it's very direct. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, you see here that there's this dispute. Every time Garmi comes up in the Gemara, they quote this dispute. We paskin Dina de Garmi. Just to make a little, that story short, even though it's an ongoing debate throughout the Talmud, we paskin that way. We paskin that. You could go after me for the money. So why? Why is that not the same as the fire going into the house? So Lisa said, "Well, it sounds pretty direct to me, right?" And that's pretty much.
You got in here. There's no wind blowing.
Well, what do you mean?
You did it.
Right. I did it. I caused it directly. So the rush. Right, this actually is already, it's 1300s or so. Right, so the Rush explains, and he asks this question. He says, "Why is it that we pass in grumma? That grumma is a putter, is exempt, but garmi is going to be chayiv." His example of garmi is very interesting. His example of garmi is if a person has a wheat field, and I decide to throw some of my vineyard, my vines, my grapevines over his wheat field. So far, so good, except there is a prohibition of kelayim, right? By me doing that, and by the wheat growing after I've done that, I've caused a mixture of grain and grapes, right? And that got rid of his whole, that took care of his whole wheat field, right? So that's what we call garmi. Now, is that direct? So Lisa says, it's direct enough for me, right? Even though I didn't do it, I put it in place and let the wheat and the grains grow together, that's still going to be considered garmi. So how do we explain this? So how is that different than grumma? So let's see his definition. On the second line after the couple of dots there, it says,
Is this last case something where he's given you permission?
No. It's me getting after my neighbor because he, used the snowblower and blew it all snow on
the
floor.
He's going to climb the whole thing anyway.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that just gets, that's the issue too. I mean, that's, you know.
Right. So what's his explanation? So he really gives two distinctions. He says v'yesh l'chalik. You could distinguish as follows: the chol heicha dehu ba'atzma osa hezek l'mamul chaveru ubari hazeka mikri dina de garmi v'chayev. That when he himself is causing the problem, meaning he did it. Right? How did the problem with the loan getting forgiven get caused? Was I did something? Right? Even though it didn't directly do it, it was something going on between them and not me. Right? I did it. It was my action. Right? And it could very quickly be associated with my action. right? And it's clear that that's what happened. So that case, I would be chayiv, right? Sorry, shtar o mochel hu ba'atzmo mazik l'mom chaver. I'm causing that loss to their to that thing. Fine. V'od yeshel chalek. Answer number two is the chol hichada hezek nasa miyad b'shas maisa nikra dina degarmi. That when it happens immediately, I mean, as soon as I forgave the loan, the damage was done. Right, as opposed to the fire, where I put the fire in place and the wind blows it over, that's when the damage happens. Now you have a little bit of a problem figuring out the Kalayim case with that, right? Because the mixture doesn't really happen right away. But okay, but those are the two distinctions that he makes. So if we have either of these, even if it's indirect, right, either of these two things happen. It could be directly associated to me, or B, it happens at the same time, right? We have the possibility to call that garmi. In which case, I would be chayev. In which case, I would be obligated. Yes?
So,
this is the easy part, by the way.
Because what I don't understand is, you're forgiving this person his loan with you, but the loan is really kind of bought out. It's like when your mortgage is bought by someone else, you're obligated to pay the mortgage to the other person.
Right. Why that should work, you gotta spend more time learning Maseches Ketubos. Why exactly that would work. It would be because it's owed to me, but the right of collection goes to him. You'll make a distinction. But the Gemara is saying, however you're going to phrase the distinction, there is a distinction, and it works. Right? We don't have time to argue that case.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to accept something else very soon, which you're not going to want to accept. But sorry, otherwise the shir is just not going to be able to go on. Okay, the Gemara in Bechoros. What in the world is this doing in Maseches Bechoros? So the Gemara in Bechoros, what is Maseches Bechoros about? It is about the Korban Bechoros. That's when if a person has a some of it has to do with Pidyon HaBen. That's the end of it. But most of it has to do with animals. That if the animal is if you have a firstborn animal, male animal, right? Firstborn male animal, right? So that gets given to a Kohen, and the Kohen has to bring it as a korban. The Kohen has to bring it as a sacrifice, and the Kohen gets to eat the meat. If, however, the animal develops a mum, develops a blemish, the Kohen does not have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and he gets to just eat it by himself, right? So, although we're very into going to Beis HaMikdashes and bringing korbanos and things like that, really, if it's some Kohen living in the Galil someplace, or living in Kansas, right? It's much in his interest. It's not a mitzvah to lose bars. It would apply anywhere in the world. So it's very much in his interest that the animal develop a mum rather than him having to schlep this animal to Yerushalayim. You know, if they charge you for carry-ons, imagine what they're going to charge you for that. So how do you figure out whether this animal has a mum or not? Well, you got to bring it to an expert. That's how you figure it out. So the Mishnah, which is not on this page, has a question. What if you bring it to the guy? The guy says that it has a mum, but you forgot to check his mum checking license, and it turns out that he didn't give you good advice, but you had already shafted, in which case you lose the animal. So can you sue him? Right, so that's quite. You could always sue him, but will you win the suit? Right, so that's the previous Mishnah. Now we get to a little bit more. So that leads to some other things, and that is this: Dun es hadin. Right, if a person judged a court case or judged a shaila, as we'll see, a question. Right, zika es hachayiv v'chayiv es hazakai. Let's say he ruled the guilty party. Well, guilty means is like a defense, right? So you have Shmerel is suing Beryl, and he rules in favor of Beryl, and really he should have ruled in favor of Shmerel. Right? That's simple enough. So he's Zike is a chayv, chayv is a zakai, right? So he messed up one way or the other. Or Time es hatahor v'tihar es hatame. Right? I ruled something that was tame, really tahor, or something that was tahor was really tame. Now, it doesn't sound like that was a disaster, and what kind of loss would that cause? When you think about it, that could cause a major loss. Because I rule something to be tahor. So what does the person do with that loaf of bread that is tahor? He puts it with the rest of his loaves of bread that are tahor. Then I go back to him a week later, silly me, right? It really should have been tameh. So not only is that loaf tameh, but all the loaves that it has touched is tameh, right? So that bad psak... What?
And the crockery or shelving it was on, too, or no?
Depending on what it would be. If it's attached to the wall, probably not. If it's in the middle of, right, if it's unattached, then maybe yes, or whatever. But I've caused this person major tsaros, right, by that psak, and perhaps a significant loss of money as well. Right, the same way would work the opposite as well. Or if I tell the person this, something is tameh, and he does something with it, which he wasn't supposed to do, right, it really was tahor, so right, maybe he threw it out, right? So, or he gave it to the dogs. Right, so I've caused him a loss. That the dogs might have been happy, but I've caused him otherwise caused them a loss. Right, so masha asa asoi. What is done is done. We can't necessarily go back and redo it. Vishalim beso. And guess what? The person who made the psak has to pay. He actually has to pay the damages. However, and this is the part that gets very counterintuitive. V'im hayam mumcha lebeisdin. If he is a registered expert, if he has his official, we'll call it smicha, for instance, hanging on the wall, saying that he is an expert in the following halachos, in that case, patur milashalim, he is exempt. Right? So the bigger the expert you are, the more of a chance you have for getting off the hook. Right?
Even if you make a mistake.
Even if you made a mistake. Now, there's also different types of mistakes, as we're going to learn.
So the theory is that because you're an expert, you're going to make less mistakes?
Right. So why that should be, why should that be? Why should an expert get off the hook more? And it's going to get worse later. But the only reason that I was able to find, and I'd like to be able to find a better reason than this, because it doesn't sit so well with me. But the only reason I can find is the Rif explains. The Rif goes back, you know, before the time of the Rambam. So the Rif said in the back of the Gemara says, because otherwise, who's going to want to go into that business? Right, who's going to want to be a judge? Who's going to want to be a rabbi if he's going to get hit up for every bad decision he makes? It's a little hard to accept. Why? I don't know. Other areas of work, you also. Who's going to want to be a mechanic if people can get you in trouble for bad work that you like? So maybe it could be in any business if you haven't, right? That will be the case. But that is the official reason on the books. I have nothing to say more than that. So we can't really debate. That's just kind of what we have to accept in order to be able to have the rest of this year.
It seems like it's sort of analogous to practicing without a license.
If you're not, I mean, if you're not an expert, you can get in trouble because you practice without a license.
Not so much you can get in trouble, but it's not.
Right, but why should? Right, but why shouldn't he? Meaning he should have checked.
Why should I
lose? I said, listen, I don't have a license. This is my opinion.
I should have read one. I should have told you that I don't really know the subject.
No. Maybe they knew.
Well, they don't know.
I tell them, listen, this is my.
So there's no quality control.
Anyway, in theory, with a license, somebody made sure that you have
right.
Expertise.
Like, it might be that that's the advantage of getting a license. You know, it's a different thought, right? Maybe to entice people to get licenses, we offer them the exemption from mistakes that you might possibly make. Okay, maybe. Fine. So that is so. Ma'aseh b'par. Now, there's a couple of lines in the Gemara explaining that case, but we took out that Gemara and move on to the next Mishnah. Ma'aseh b'par shenitla ha'im shela, that there was a cow that they removed its womb. W-O-M-B, right? They took the womb out of the cow, right? So they went through Rabbi Tarfon. Someone asked Rabbi Tarfon, the Shaila, have this cow. Its womb was removed, right? What is the status of that cow with regards to a trefa, right? Is this cow trefe? Because it's damaged. It's like it has a hole in its lung, right? That's the most common trefa, but it has a problem, right? And it's a sick animal, and therefore I wouldn't be allowed to eat it. So Rabbi Tarfon says, "Oh, it's missing a womb. That sounds like a pretty big trefa to me, right? Sorry, you have to get rid of it. Go feed it to the dogs, right?" So again, the dogs are very excited, but the person who asked Rabbi Tarfon is not. So uba ma'isel ifnei chachamim v'yavne, and this shaila came the way of the chachamim in Yavne. Right, and they said, "Wait a second! It's mutter. You're a cow without a missing womb is not a trefa." Right, so I'm not sure if it's Vilmar or Shamar. Those all the parentheses are messed up here, but why? Because we have this statement from Todos Harofe, Doctor Todos. Right, Ein para v'chazira yotza me'alexandria shel mitzrayim she'ein chotchena im shela bishvil shelo teled. That there is not a cow. Or a chazira, or a pig, right? That left Alexandria with its womb intact. Why did they want to take out the wombs? Because they had very special they had very special cows and pigs in Alexandria, and they didn't want them to be breeded elsewhere, right? They wanted to maintain the quality.
Like a Guernsey cow.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. So they took out all the wombs. But guess what? They were still in demand, and people still bought them, and they were able to live for quite a while. So clearly, missing a womb is not considered a trefa. Right? That's the proof they brought to him. So I'm a Rebbe Tarfon. So they went back to Rebbe Tarfon, and Rebbe Tarfon hits himself in the head and says, well, halko chamorcha Tarfon. Well, I guess Tarfon just lost his donkey. Why does Tarfon say he just lost his donkey? Because he's going to pay, right? And that's how he's going to pay. He's going to pay with his donkey. So Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. He said, Rabbi Akiva, oh, not so fast. Rabbi Tarfon, ata mumcha lebeisin. No, it's okay. Plus, you're a mumcha lebeisin. V'chol mumcha lebeisin patur milashalim. And all those that are mumchas to beisin are going to be exempt from paying. Okay. So that's one way to get off. Is there another way to get off? So the Gemara, their comments, v'tepekle the taha b'dvar Mishnah. Why didn't he just tell him, well, the reason you're exempt is because you were taha b'dvar Mishnah. Now, what in the world does that mean? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a long description of this, what it means is that there are two types of mistakes that a dayan can make, that a judge can make, or that a posek, that a rabbi can make, right? Somebody asks you a question: is this kosher? Is it not kosher? So I could think, well, I think that's exactly the case in Shulchan Aruch, and Shulchan Aruch it paskins that it's usher. I don't bother looking it up. And then a week later, I look it up and realize that it said mutter. That's what you call tab advar mishnah. I just made a mistake. Right? I thought the source said X, and really the source said Y. Right? That's what you call tab advar mishnah. Then there's something else called a tab shikl hadas. What is shikl hadas? Shikl hadas is logic. Right? A problem in logic. What is the problem in logic? Right, that all the sources are there, and the rabbi has to make a decision how to paskin based on those sources, and he makes the wrong decision. Right? He makes a thing that doesn't make sense. The Rambam's explanation is that the Gemara has a debate on a topic. Right, it's a machlokas. It's a dispute between Ravina who says this and Ravashi says this, and I said, I don't know. I kind of like Ravina. They paskin like Ravina. But meanwhile, I find out that everybody else in the world paskin like Ravashi. Right? So that is considered a ta'a b'shikl hadas. Right? Now that could change over time. Right? What would be considered a ta'a b'dvar mishnah versus what would be a ta'a b'shikl hadas? Right? That could shift over time. So what is accepted, what is not, what's officially on the books, and what's not. But that is the distinction. Okay, now which is considered worse? Right? Which would be more likely to be considered liable for the mistake? So this is another counterintuitive thing, right? A tov b'tvar mishnah would exempt somebody. A tov b'shikl hadas, a tov, a mistake in logic, would perhaps hold the person liable. Why in the, right? Again, if you make a mistake about a source, rabbi's exempt. If you make a mistake in logic, in the way he thinks about it, in that case he would be obligated. Why would that be? So this is also shut them on, but we'll give one, right? That when you make a mistake in the source, so the entire thing that you've done is all wrong. So in theory, the entire court case should just be overturned, and what you did was not an action. You didn't do anything. Right? It's based on nothing. If you made a toes b'shikl hadas, so that was a decision. The rabbi made a decision. Right? It's a wrong decision. Sorry, the decision was done. We can't overturn his logic. We could overturn his lack of knowledge of the sources, but we can't overturn his faulty logic. Right? So that's what the Gemara asks here. The Gemara asks, but typically the tub idvar mishnah, right? Why didn't they say the Rabbi Tarfon is exempt? Because he was a tov b'dvar mishnah, he just made a mistake in facts. But tov b'dvar mishnah chozer, tov b'dvar mishnah will just get overturned, it will go back, and he should be exempt. So Gemara answers chada va'od ka'amar, right? No, you're right. There are two reasons, right? Chada the tov b'dvar mishnah chozer. One is because he made this mistake based on sources, in which case he would be exempt. V'od inami v'shikla das te'isa mumcha lebeisinat. If you claim that no, this is a mistake in logic, we're going to consider him a mumcha lebeisin, in which case he's going to be exempt anyways. Either way, Rav Tarfon has full right to hold on to his donkey, right? Okay. So, next. Okay, so now we start seeing some of this. Thank you. Now, as we move on, just think for a minute. Why would he be obligated in any type of court case? Right? If there is a court, right, why would the decider of the law, or the rabbi, right, be obligated in any type of decision that he makes, whether it's a court case between people, right? He didn't do it, right? This guy, I tell this guy, well, throw out your dishes. Bas v'shal. Right? But, right? You tell somebody, throw out your dishes. And the person throws out the dishes. You tell them, right? And you know, you shouldn't have. Well, sorry, I did already. Who damaged the dishes?
The owner.
The owner did the damage to the dishes. I didn't damage it directly, right? It should be grumma. So the answer is perhaps no. Then no, it's garmi. That if he's basing himself totally on what the rabbi tells him, or we'll see another type of experts tell him, so that's not considered grum anymore. That's considered garmi. Now, truth is, it goes a little bit against what the Rosh says. The Rosh says it has to happen exactly the same time. Perhaps not. It's not what it means. Meaning the decision for it to happen has to happen. Then, meaning as soon as the rabbi tells him, that person being a good congregant said, well, the rabbi said it's in the consider it in the garbage already, right? So that's why it would be considered garmi. Yes.
Well, maybe that is a distinction between just an incorrect citation or source, mm-hmm. and the logic is because the person could then take that logic and apply it to what they think is an analogous situation, so it could go on and on and on. It's just a citation.
Yeah.
The source could be just one thing.
We don't have, well, excuse me, I shouldn't say we don't have any, I just skipped the ball. But we don't really have any zeros here. We're trying to deal with, I think pretty much everything on the page here is the law. Not the rabbis did this in order so that X, right? We're not dealing with those kinds of things tonight. There is a pshat that the reason why garmi is chayiv is for that reason. Because the guy did a very bad thing and we're going to hold him liable. And it's really, according to the Torah, it's grumma and garmi are the same thing. But the rabbis made an exception and said, no, because we're going to hold people liable in that cases, which raises itself a whole question. I mean, how could the Torah rule a person exempt? And right, that according to the Torah, Reuven doesn't have to pay Shimon for the garmi, right? And the rabbis came along and said, but we're going to make you pay. The guy's like, what do you mean? The Torah says I don't have to. All right, how could the rabbis make me do it if the Torah says I don't have to? Right, that's a whole separate question for another time. Okay, so does this apply in other areas of halacha? So sections 5 and 6 deal with a money exchanger, right? And apparently there were major issues during the time of the Gemara of faulty coinage, of counterfeit coin things. Right? Who deals with counterfeit currency in the United States? Anybody know which department?
Secret Service.
Very good. Secret Service. Good federal government knowledge there. So Itmar.
And they're not doing their other shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
So Itmar. So the Gemara tells us, Itmar, Hamara Dinar, Lishulchane Vinimtsa Ra. Right? You show a dinar to the Shulchane, to the money changer. And Rashi adds in, and he said it's good. I mean, you say, is this coin good? Is it counterfeit or is it good? The guy says, no, it's good. And it turns out, Nim Sarah, it turns out that it was no good, right? It turns out that it was bad.
So
is it that the money changers are the expert? Let's see. So Tani Chad Uman Pater, Hed Yud Chayev. So one price that says, well, if he's an Uman, if he is a licensed money changer, he's going to be exempt. However, if he's just some dude, right, he does it as a hobby, right, so he's going to be obligated. The Tanya Idach, and the other Bryce that tells us, the other teaching says, no, Ben Uman, Ben Hedyot, he's going to be Chayiv. Whether he is a worker, whether he is a pro or not, he's going to be Chayiv. So how do you resolve those two? That seems to be a contradiction, right? How do you resolve that? So Amar Papa, Kitanya Uman Pater, the case that says that the worker is exempt, Kigon Danko V'Isur. Who's Danko and Isur? They're two guys that were very good at coins. They knew their coins. They were the experts. The Lot Srichi Lemigbra Klal. They have nothing left to learn. The Gemara goes on to ask, well, there's nothing left to learn, how'd they make the mistake? There's an answer to that question. But those guys are the real experts. So what does it seem to be, right? Danku and the other guy, and Isur, they are going to be, they're the experts. A simple money changer? Well, he can do math. He knows how to read those charts where it says buy, sell, and has all the different currencies on the board, right? But he doesn't necessarily, he's not necessarily an expert in what's counted and what's not. He might know a little bit more than the average schmo, right? But he is not necessarily going to be considered an expert. That's the way one has to understand this Gemara. By the way, there is an additional thought of what if he gets paid for it? If he gets paid for it, it could very likely be that he would be obligated. There's another Gemara that didn't make the cut about if you go to a shochet, a chef, and he messes up. So who's going to be held liable, right? There is A, the money you paid him, and B, there's the cost of the animal, right? Could you hold the shochet liable for that? Okay, so that is a... So then, and finally, the Gemara number 6 has a story about Reish Lakish, who showed his coin to Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer said it was fine, and then he said, and Reish Lakish said to him, really, I'm relying on you, and he says, why are you telling me that? I thought you assumed that we don't judge the din of Garmi. To which Reish Lakish says, no, I do hold of the din of Garmi, and you are going to be held liable if you are making a mistake on this coin. So those are all of the Gemaras. So we have this concept of Garmi, we have this concept that if you very closely indirectly cause the damage, you could be held liable, right? And then we have this concept that if you are an absolute expert, you can be held exempt from any mistake you're going to make, but if you are below an expert, so then you have the possibility of being held liable for mistakes that you're going to make. Okay? All right, moving right along here. Next case. So the Rambam, Maimonides, codifies this and explains that in Halacha Aleph, kol dayan shedan dini mamonos v'ta, right? Any judge who judges a monetary case and makes a mistake, right, in ta bidvarm hagluyim v'hayaduim, if he makes a mistake in things that everybody should know, or at least that are apparent, meaning you should be able to find in a text or with an easy Google search, right? You go in dinin umeforshin b'mishna o gemara chozer hadin umachzirin hadaver kishahaya v'dan bo kalacha. Right, and you could easily find it in the Gemara, so then everything goes back to the way it was, and you restart the case as it should be. However, if you can't return it, for example, the guy who got the money has already gone overseas, or it's already lost, it's gone, right? You gave it, you already threw the china into the garbage, or you already gave it to the dog, you already gave the cow that didn't have the womb to the dogs, right? He's going to be exempt from paying. Why? Afal pishigaram lahazik, lo nischavin lahazik. Because even though he caused the damage, he didn't have intention to damage. What's going on here? So the Rambam, in fact, is disagreeing with the Rush. The Rambam is adding another requirement for something to be held liable for that Garmi rule that we're talking about. We mentioned before, not only does it have to happen in the past, right, and at the same time, not only does it have to be very closely associated, but you actually have to have intention to damage. You have to have intention to damage. However, and we'll do this part outside, what about if... Right, you have to have intention to damage. Fine. This is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. You go down to source number 8. Right, which is kind of a quote from the Rambam. Right in the middle there, where it starts with that little gimel there. Right, if it's not possible for one to backtrack, for example, he already went and he already took the money, he already went to another country, or he's gone. She treifa achim leklav mechiyotzi v'zehareze patrim leshalim afapisha garam lahazik lo nischavin lahazik. So even though he caused it, he didn't have that intention. However, what are the next words? And it's in Rashi's script. V'yesh cholkim. There are those that disagree. Who is the one who disagrees? Tur b'shem harash. The Tur in the name of the Rush. How did the Tur know what the Rush said so well? The Tur was the son of the Rush, right? Besides the fact that the Rush wrote a lot of things down, right? The Tur happened to have some inside access, right? So some disagree. What is he disagreeing about? He's saying Garmi doesn't mean that you have to have intention to damage. Right, Garmi could simply mean, right, that you caused the damage and you are not protected by the mumcha status. You're not protected by the expert status. So that is going to be a dispute between Sephardim and Ashkenazim, right? Between whether the person who made the mistake is going to be held liable. However, right? It's
so
only
words,
if. But,
in other words, negative intent will override anything else with respect to your previous education and
correct, correct. Okay. And one could argue and say that just by posketing the case that you're not. That you don't know about, you're not really an expert in, could be considered negative intent. But apparently, that's not where the Rambam goes, but could be that's where the Rush would go. That would
so
be
who
considered.
Falls on which side? Who falls which one?
So the Rambam would be is easier on the people that make the decisions.
No, Ashkenazim.
Oh, Ashkenazim would be like the little guy, like the Rush.
Okay. All
right, now, when it comes to monetary law, there is much more intersection for. Of a special status in monetary law that we might be covering in the next 2 weeks. So you have to think of this concept called Kinley, where a person could say, I hold like that opinion. But, okay, right, and therefore I wouldn't be able to take money from somebody, but the person could always say, well, I hold like that opinion. But that's not, but we're trying to figure out what the halacha is, not necessarily but how it would be decided in a court of law. Okay, but in theory, the rabbi could be held, so could the rabbi be held liable? So, to take care of our first question, so assuming the rabbi is a rabbi of a shul and he has been hired to paskin shilas on behalf of the shul, assuming it's not something that is clearly out of his league. Meaning, if you look, I could have brought down my smicha that's hanging upstairs. So it lists the halachas that I'm qualified to paskin shilas. Okay. I'm not sure I'm qualified to paskin every halacha that comes up in all of those areas of halacha, but you know, enough of them. In theory, the rabbi is supposed to know his boundaries. All right. So in theory, he's A, hired by the community to do this, and B, he's been certified. Enough of an expert to be able to answer these questions, so the a rabbi of a shul is probably exempt from these types of lawsuits. However, if you go to some guy in the shul who doesn't have that type of authority, or maybe you know, like a teacher in a day school or something like that, that his role is not really to paskin shilas, and they make a mistake, one can start talking about whether they would be held liable for those could be held liable for those types of mistakes. Okay, so that is the rabbi status. So not to be too self-serving, but of course then you have a question about where a rabbi of a shul intersects as being a teacher in a school. What role does he play in those two things, right? That's an ongoing debate in the in the community here. Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two, having to do with our board members, right, that want to take on some extra jobs. So how does the Shulchan Aruch paskin with regards to these coins? So in those cases, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Hamara dinar l'shulchani." You show the dinar, the source number 9, to the money exchanger. V'amar lo, and he says, "Yafahu." He says it's great. V'nim sarat, turns out it's no good. Im bischar ra'ahu, if I pay them for his opinion, chayv l'shalat. Right, we threw that in before. Right, if he gets paid, right, that's kind of outside the realm of this year, but he could be held. He is much more higher level of responsibility. Afav yishu baki ve'enu tzarich lehislamid. Even though he's an expert, he could still be held liable. But you showed it to him for free, right? He's just some guy in shul that you show him after minyan, right? As most business gets done, right? Pater, he's going to be exempt. Right? As long as he is a real expert. But if he is not a real expert, he's only somewhat of an expert. He's going to be obligated to pay, even if he did it for free. Was he says, I relied on you. And as long as he said, I relied on you, or it was clear that he was going to make the decision based on whatever that person said. Meaning, if I was saying, I'm relying on you, that opens the garmi status, right? It's clear what's going on. It's clear, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do based on whatever you say. In which case, even though you're not doing it directly, that's still going to be close enough for you to be held liable.
Because if you're just having a casual conversation with someone where they're soliciting your opinion about something,
mm-hmm.
That probably isn't gonna fit with the
right. That it's not going to be a garment
because you're not saying
right.
You know,
right. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch saying.
My decision about doing this is
right.
Going to be on what
right. It has to be clear
or not.
It has to be clear whether or not it's stated or not. But
okay.
It has to be clear that person's decision is going to be followed. Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so now would this apply?
How does this apply to the law?
So would this apply in the shul status? So could this apply with a person who's kind of a public thing? So guess what? In Shulchan Aruch it says as the following case: Mishifkidu etzlo mo'os aniyim opinyon shvuyim. Let's say you deposited by some person money for the poor or money for freeing captives. Right, the guy is the gabbai tzaka, right? And we give that person the money. Upasha behem, and he makes a mistake with it. Benignivu, and it is stolen, so he is going to be putter. He is going to be exempt in that case because he is what we call a shomer chinam. He is a unpaid watchman, in which case he's only obligated if he makes one mistake. What is that? If he is a posheya, if he is negligent. Right, if he is negligent, so then he could be held. Then he could be held liable. So that's what we need from that case. So how would that play with this guy who says, "Oh, it's yellow and red. I'll just go to Lowe's and get yellow and red paint." Right? I don't know. Is that considered negligent? I think so. I think that's probably in the realm of negligence.
But he brought Chip, and that's still a body match.
Mixed the paint wrong,
and then came back and it was wrong because right. The light changed or something. Then that's not.
If he brought a Chip, the light's not changing. But yeah, right. If he did what he's supposed to do, so then that's what we call an onis. That's what we call a. An accident. That's what we call it. An accident. Right? It's the diligence and an accident. But if he, what's the big deal? You just go and get some yellow paint, right? So that would probably be considered an act of negligence, in which case, even though it was on behalf of the shul, right, he could still be considered liable because that's just, he's a watch. He has the responsibility of the shul funds, and he's messing with it, and therefore, if he's negligent, he would be chayv. If he is a paid watchman, if he's the paid, in this case, gabbai tzedakah, or if he is the janitor of the shul, right? He's paid for that work, and he might not only if it would be considered negligent, but even if there would be stolen, or if it would be is he chayv and onsen? I'm forgetting now. His responsibility would clearly be going up.
Which can we?
He would be considered probably a shomer sacher.
Yeah, I think he's not
liable. So his liability, if he makes a mistake, goes up.
He's only a shomer.
Right. He's only a shomer. Only a shoel is chayv anotzen. Correct. Okay. Fine. So that is our case number. That is our question number two. And then we turn to case number three, where there's guy in shul in the board meeting and says, "Oh, I'll invest the money. Don't worry, we'll get a 15% return. No questions asked." Right? And it turns out he was investing with Bernie Madoff. No, that's probably not the best example because there, at that time, it probably seemed reasonable, right? When people were still investing with him. But right, the person gives some amount of investing advice. So is that considered a problem? Could he be held liable for giving bad advice, or maybe even if he's the one who invested the money himself, could that be even worse? So the Sefer Pischei Choshen, as you go to a lot of Batei Midrashos, you'll see about 8-volume set of called Pischei Choshen. You'll see it's probably not very well used because it's the areas that people don't know, practical Choshen Mishpat issues, practical monetary laws. But it's written by some Rabbi Yaakov Bloy. He's perhaps more famous for his work on mezuzah, the little sefer I have on mezuzah called Chovas Sadar, which is great. So he wrote this. This is a much bigger work, but I think I'm not sure if he's still alive or not. But he is a recent in the last century. So he says, when it comes to dealing with investments, yois li yoni hashkos sheyatz b'hashka lo tova, an advisor when it comes to investments, and he gives bad advice. Right, l'cha'ora hayanir sheish makom l'chayvo midin mara dinar o midin ploni batuach. Right, maybe there's room to sue him. Right, for him to be held liable because he's like the coin guy. Right, he's like the money exchanger. So maybe he should be held liable. Right? We're relying on him, so therefore it's like Garmi. We're giving it into his hands. Maybe we can distinguish. Right? Maybe you could distinguish and just say, you know, when it comes to the coins, right, there's one for him to look into. But when it comes to the investments, right, when it comes, right, if there's what that he should have known about, so then it's like the coins. So the coins right in front of him, he can analyze the coin. Right, and if he knew something and he made a mistake, right, even if he was working for free, he would be held liable. If it was impossible for him to know, right, what does it say on all the commercials from the investment forms, right? Past performance is no guarantee of future success, right? So if he says, listen, I'm doing the best I can, right, I think I'm doing okay, but my money is invested there also. So, right, near Shafilu Biskar Potter, then he would be exempt. Because everybody knows that's the way the market works. Right? Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. But he at least entertains the possibility that a person could be obligated. The sefer on the side here, Shaul Sechu, was Evan Pina. He doesn't seem to even, he says that it's totally different than the money changer. For the reason that was alluded to before. When it comes to the money changer, the money's right there. And you're asking him yes or no. Right? And he should figure out yes or no. But when it comes to any type of, he's kind of talking about depreciation of gold and pork rinds and that market, the futures and things like that. Right? So how are you supposed to know whether the value is going to be going up or whether it's going to be going down? So he held, by definition, a person in that area of work would be held liable unless there's some kind of gross negligence. I would add in one more shaila, which is somewhat...
I'm sorry, would be held liable?
So he would not be. So he's saying he would not be. Because people know when you're in that business, you know, it's all going to be a risk. One more thing about advice, one more shaila that I saw raised. and that is, a person went and decided they were going to buy a very nice esrog for Sukkos. Right? A very nice mehudar esrog. There's only one problem. It's very nice. There's no spots on it. It's very clean. Except it's still green. Right? And he wants it to be yellow. Right? So you leave a green esrog around. Hopefully it will turn. It'll start turning yellow. So the guy, the seller, convinces him, Sukkot's still 3 days, still have time, whatever. The guy says, fine, okay. This must have been happening in Israel, otherwise the Shiloh wouldn't have happened, as you'll see shortly. So the person said to the seller, listen, you're the Esrog guy. Can you tell, is there a way to speed up the yellowing process? To which the guy says, yeah. Put it in the microwave for 5 minutes.
Oh, God.
So the guy doesn't have a microwave. So he goes to his friend's house and he uses his friend's microwave. And lo and behold, rather than having a mehudar green esrog, he has esrog jelly. Right? It doesn't quite survive the 5 minutes in the microwave. So the shaila was asked to Rav Zilberstein, who gets all of these crazy questions, right? Could he hold the esrog expert liable for giving that advice? Now, in theory, he is a mumcha, right? He is giving expert advice, right? But what is the rule about garmi, right? It has to be that it's clear that whatever you tell me, I'm going to do. So Rav Zilberstein said, the esrog dealer gives it to him. It clearly was not clear to him that whatever he tells him he's going to do, he figured he was joking, right? There's no way that anybody in their right mind that knows what microwaves do would ever put their esrog into a microwave. Of course, this guy didn't have a microwave. He doesn't really know. But the connection, the direct connection that one needs of the advice to the action, Rav Zilberstein paskened, was not there. He said the only person that might be held liable is who?
The
guy who owned the microwave. What's he doing? He at least should know how microwaves work. If he's the one who actually put the esrog in the microwave, right, so then maybe he's the one that could be held liable. However, if the guy said, oh yeah, the microwave's over there in the corner, just turn the knob, right? So then he's probably off the hook too. And who's held liable? The guy who didn't know enough about the way microwaves work. Okay, so that, I think we took care of our three questions. Right, there's obviously much more to discuss on this topic. I think going once, going twice. All right, thank you everybody for coming tonight.